Hello, everybody, and welcome to Turn the Page, Season 4, Book 6 of Twistaplot, Crash Landing! Exclamation point! By Arthur Roth. Did I scare you?
Yep. Good. Yeah, there's something scary in the title here, too.
That it seems to be happening. However, would it ease the tension a bit if you knew that fame, exclamation, fortune, exclamation, adventure, exclamation point, all are yours if you survive the crash landing?
That would help assuage my fear, frankly, if I knew on the other end of this traumatic incident is my biggest come up.
It's true. I feel like adventure... Here's the thing. Fame, fortune, if you survive, sure, I get it. Adventure, I do feel like, is not prerequisite on survival. I think that you could adventure and then die.
Let me pitch an option to you, though.
Please.
Plane's about to go down.
Great. Right?
Everyone's starting to panic. Everyone's starting to try and like reassure themselves, like, oh no, the plane's not going down. This is just clearly like wild turbulence. The air machines start dropping from the roof. Everyone's like, oh no, we're in for the real. We're going down.
This is 20 straight minutes of free fall and turbulence. It's fine.
Exactly. About 18 minutes into that free fall and turbulence, you just pop a blood vessel and you're out, right? You don't even make it to the crash landing. Is this not pre-adventure?
I suppose
that person wouldn't even be an extra on Lost, right? They would just use a body. They would just dress up a body on the beach.
That's true. I don't know, but for me, it's just like the thing is, there's no gray area with if. It feels so Boolean, you know, like if survive, then adventure. If don't survive, then no adventure. Anyways, doesn't matter.
You are right. There is a possibility of not surviving, but still having undergone an entire adventure.
Yeah.
Which, a good case in point for that would be most of the rest of the characters in Lost.
It's also true. Also, most humans, in general, don't make it in the end. Sorry, spoilers, life spoilers.
None of us are making it out of here alive.
Yeah. But maybe fame, fortune, and adventure if you survive. But hey, yeah, full circle. We get it's the Lost podcast we've always wanted, maybe, because this cover does look like a plane crash landing on a deserted island. Seems to be the case. So take us away. Bewarn us.
Beware.
Don't read the book from beginning to end.
Your plane is about to make an unscheduled landing.
A crash landing!
In the short time you have left, you must decide whether to bail out in a parachute or take your chances by staying on board. And even if you reach the mountains or the endless desert in one piece, how will you find your way back to civilization? Savage tribes, dangerous animals, impassable rivers, and unexplored jungles await you if you go one way. If you head in another direction, you may die of thirst or heatstroke in a scorching desert. Or, if you get lucky, you may find a fortune in buried treasure. You'll decide how to survive the terrors that await you by following the directions at the bottom of each page. If you choose wisely and safely, maybe even fame and fortune can be yours. Make the wrong decision and you may spend the rest of your life in an unmapped jungle far away from everything you know.
Petition to call the tribes the others.
Love it.
Two-prong solve. Your flight is now boarding on page 2. You're in a plane, flying over the Andes Mountains of South America, heading home after a week in Argentina. The trip you won after taking first place on the balance beam in your state's annual gymnastics competition was fun. Wow, okay.
Did that just happen a bunch in the 80s?
Is that just, like, often you... Okay, sorry, that was so... The time, for the book time to... Mind flood is so fast on this one. But now you're eager to see your family again. Mom, Dad, your brother Tim, and your sister Christina. You can hardly wait to tell them and all your friends about your adventures. Although you had a wonderful time, and you're a little bit homesick. You even miss your dog Flash and your pet hamster Miss Piggy. This is a lot of backstory that is going to be names for people that we probably will not ever see.
Yeah, exactly. Like, these may reoccur on the final page if we happen to get back from this adventure.
Yes.
And we're not so famous and fortunate by that point that we haven't just dismissed all of these previous plebes we knew. They're not welcome.
Yep. Thinking about missing things, you wonder how much work you missed in school. After a week in South America, your Spanish has improved at least. Suddenly, the plane begins to bounce around. Your mouth goes dry and you grip the arms of the seat. What's going on? Looking out the window, you realize that the plane is in a blinding storm. Lightning flashes and you shrink back into your seat. The plane gives a sickening lurch and someone screams. You feel like screaming too, but you clap your hand over your mouth. It'd be embarrassing to scream. Just then you hear a shout and look up. A steward named Wayne is standing at the head of the aisle. Go to page 3.
I've got to have your attention,
he orders. Everyone calms down for a second. You strain forward to hear a little bit better, and the plane bumps in the air.
We've lost an engine, and the plane is losing altitude,
Wayne announces.
The captain's gonna have to crash land the plane. As it happens, we have a dozen parachutes on board as we're delivering for the Air Force, but the captain would like the volunteers to use the parachutes. The less weight there is on the plane, the longer he'll be able to keep it airborne, and the more time he'll have to find a safe landing place.
I like the idea of, like, just the smallest modicum of trying to save face by saying, the captain is going to have to crash land this plane.
Mm.
Feels like he has some kind of say over it in that, I don't know.
The captain is choosing to crash land the plane.
I'm so sorry. The captain has made the executive decision upon looking at our missing engine that we're going to have to crash land this plane.
Take it up with him!
What a tough choice he's made. You're not sure what to do. Jumping with a parachute could be dangerous, but crash landing a plane is dangerous too. Yeah. You haven't got much time to decide. Across the aisle, Gloria and Jeff, two young people you met at the airport, volunteer to jump.
I'm not sure what to do.
You tell them.
I mean, I'm scared to jump, but I'm scared to stay on the plane.
You've got to decide, and fast, go to page 4. The less weight there is on the plane, the longer he'll be able to keep it airborne.
Hmm.
I mean,
should the parachutes go to the heaviest folk?
Well, I mean, I guess
keep
there's
plane lighter.
I guess there's that. But it was also just like in my head, I'm like, how much of a difference is it going to make? How many parachutes do you have?
That is true, right? We are talking about many tons.
This is not like a helicopter.
Plane.
This is not like a helicopter. It's like, this is a full-on plane we see in the picture. So like, aren't some like high schoolers jumping out in 6 parachutes gonna make a difference?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
And you're right that we see the plane on the cover, but we even see that it's a 747.
Yep.
So we know that this is huge.
It's a colossal plane. anyways, you notice that several of the young... Oh, what you got?
Make sure to empty your pockets out as well. That'll keep us in the air. If anyone's holding in a fart, look. Let it out. We need to fly.
Please empty your wallets outside the aisles, outside the windows in your aisles, to your left and your right. You notice several of the younger
and stronger
passengers have volunteered to jump. You think your chances of survival are better if you stick with them. On the other hand, the older passengers who have decided to stay in the plane have much wider experience of life.
What do you think the jumpers' chances are?
You ask Wayne.
Pretty good,
he says.
The jumpers will probably land without getting hurt, but they'll have to hike it out. Crash landing with a plane is more dangerous. Your chances of getting rescued are better, but it's much easier for search parties to find a plane than a person. What are you gonna do?
You ask Wayne.
I'm going with the jumpers.
Wayne says.
I've had survival training, so at least I could be useful to them.
Already, Wayne is strapping a middle-aged man into a chute. A young girl's in the doorway getting ready to jump. It's now or never. You groan. Your first time away from home on your own, and look what's happening. You don't have anyone to help make the most important decision of your life. If you decide to jump, turn to page 6. If you decide to stay on board, turn to page 12.
Rito,
mm.
Would you be more scared of diving out of a crashing plane or crashing in a crashing plane?
This is a question that's all too, like, good for me. Because I do... One of the things that I feel like I have resigned to the fact that I will never do in my life is jump out of a plane, parachute, anything like that. It's one of the things that I've been like, I don't need to get to that point. I'm okay with it. I don't want to really. It doesn't sound particularly fun. I don't like heights. I don't like looking down the railings at the Mall of America. So I don't really want to jump out of a plane. It's
now,
the kind of thing.
If the fall is non-negotiable, do you want to be in a parachute or a plane?
And that's the thing, is like, it's there's some kind of element of unknown. It's like, if I knew that we were going to be crash landing in the ocean, it's like a, I don't know, maybe. But
Ignore the cover.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the thing. I think I would want to think that I would, in that scenario, I'd want to think that I'd do it, but I'd probably just freeze and be like, no, you saved your life.
If I'm entirely honest, one of my most common and prominent panic responses is to freeze entirely.
Yep.
I don't think I would even be capable of trying to offer, maybe I'll go with the jumping. I would just be locked in my seat, white knuckled, like, oh boy.
Yeah, I think I'd be like, maybe if I sit this way, I won't die in the crash.
Like, yeah, exactly. Yeah. I'm just going to assume the crash position.
Yeah. It's like,
this'll work.
Yeah. So should we go with the what we would probably end up doing, which is stay on board?
I think we'll stay on board.
Let's give it a go. You check your seatbelt, then look around the plane. You hope that you've made the right decision to stay on board. Suddenly you notice trees rushing by the side window. Here it comes. Grump. The plane hits. You're aware of tumbling over and over. You see blue sky just ahead of you, and somehow the plane has broken in two. Gee, I think I know why. Perhaps the crash? You can't believe it. But you're still alive and you're unhurt. You come to rest, still strapped into your seat. The rest of the plane is nowhere to be seen. You examine yourself, and nothing seems to be broken, but you can't get out of your seat because the seatbelt is jammed. You wonder if you should just sit there and wait until someone finds you, or should you sort of half-jump, half-hop in your seat and try and follow the bits and pieces of the wreckage, hoping they'll lead you to the main body of the plane. If you're the kind of person who always buckles in your seatbelt, turn to page 23. If you never buckle up, guess what? Your plane ride has ended. You died. The end. That's a nice lesson to throw in there. Falls a little bit flat right after mentioning in the paragraph we're stuck in our seat because our seatbelt is jammed.
Yeah, exactly. It's a little bit of a janky way to give this lesson, but I do think it is a good one.
Yes,
and
it is.
Also,
a good one.
I would immediately bet all of the money I have on the fact that we both buckle our seatbelts immediately.
I will not start moving if I'm driving. I will not start moving until Grace has buckled her seatbelt. Like, I'm talking we're in our driveway. I won't even start backing up until I know that everyone in the car has their belts on. I can't not. You stay.
So this is not one of our opportunities to split the vote and go either which way. We could choose to go to 23 or end.
Yeah.
No, in this instance, we're just straight to 23.
I guess we just have to do the book. We're making an emergency crash landing. We've chosen. You stay where you are, strapped into your seat. You keep shouting, but no one answers. Meanwhile, you work away on that jammed seatbelt, and finally it pops free. You get out of the seat and look around for the plane. The trail of leveled trees and pieces of wreckage is pretty easy to follow. Hours later, you spot the plane far below you. Then you turn to see people moving around. You hurry to the site, and soon you're greeted by the other survivors. You introduce yourself. The others are, you know what? Here's a little raps challenge.
Absolutely.
They all introduce themselves.
Spark Harris, treasure hunter.
Willie Kilmore, U.S. Army general.
Jenny Giacolato, 70-year-old running grandmother.
Dr. Arthur Dribb, I'm a bird watcher.
Cliff Bob, computer expert.
All right, let's get organized.
General Kilmore shouts.
First, we search the plane for food. Remember? Every little bit counts.
Everyone goes through the wreckage, and Jenny finds a salami sandwich, Dr. Dribb finds a granola bar, Cliff doesn't even bother to get up and look. We're eating Cliff. When everything is laid out, there's hardly enough for even one person.
Okay.
The general says.
We have to decide either to stay with the plane or to hike on out.
Go on to page 24.
Let's stay.
Cliff says. For a young man, Cliff looks pretty out of shape, and just the thought of hiking makes him tired.
If we stay, we'll have a place to take shelter.
You point out.
That's true.
Cliff says.
Also, search planes are more likely to find us. If we hike out, we'll soon be down to where it's warmer.
Jenny says.
Maybe there we can find some more food. There's none here.
Let's take a vote.
You suggest.
No need.
The general says.
Whoever wants to hike out can follow me, and I'll lead you to safety. Whoever wants to stay behind can do so.
If you want to follow the general, turn to page 63. If you want to stay behind, turn to page 30.
So we know that Wayne did mention that the benefit of staying with the craft itself, staying airborne, crashing, is that you might be more likely to be found because you are nearer to a large fire. That's the only thing that I have any reason to believe. Although there is no food here as well, so how long can we afford to stay?
It's a good question. I will bring one more piece of information to the table. His last name is Kilmore.
Yeah, a lot of these people have names a little on the nose. Jenny Jogolotto, who is a running grandmother, yep. And Cliff Bite. Computer
and
expert.
Even Spike Harris is probably like a Harrison Ford thing, treasure hunter.
Oh, yeah, that'd do it.
Yeah, so like it only serves to reason that Willie Kilmore is gonna have a little bit of a last name that fits him too well as well. But hey, who knows?
There's a little bit of a question as to respect to him. Will he kill less? Or Willie Kilmore? maybe we should stay here.
I don't know. I'm fine either way. I just wanted to point that out in case you hadn't already also noticed that it's. Mm-hmm. I kind of want to follow him and get blindsided.
You know what? I really want to see that.
Like, I want to see what happens.
Let's follow him on 63.
All right, now follow me.
General Kilmore waves his arm as though he were waving a sword. Everyone falls into line, and as you hike along, you talk to Jenny Jogolotto. Although she looks at least 60, she moves like a person half that age.
You're in terrific shape.
You tell her.
I'm 72, and I just ran a marathon in Peru.
She says.
That's 26 miles nonstop, sweetie.
Wow, that's great.
I hold the world record for the mile for 70-year-olds.
Jenny says.
And I can outrun almost any 70-year-old anywhere, and most 60 and 50-year-olds too. Man or woman makes no difference to me.
She stops, catches your arm, and says,
Wait a minute. Let's split. I can't stand traveling with these slow pokes. You're young and able to keep up with me.
Huh. She does seem a lot more fit than the others. On the other hand, you'd feel more secure with three or four people instead of just one. You hesitate.
Well, are you coming or not?
Jenny demands. You decide to rejoin the group on page 67. Okay. Before you go, you watch Jenny jog off on her own.
Good luck.
You call to her.
I've never seen dialogue in the below bar.
Wild. And also, that was such a setup for a choice. Do you think this was? Do you think this was like a? They ran out of time to make this branching path.
100%. I think this was like clearly truncated intentionally here.
Yeah. Are you coming or not? And then it feels like, well, if you are, then go to me. If you know, but I'm going to me. But yeah, no, it just hit us with a, well, you don't want to even consider choosing. As you walk along with the group, Dr. Drib asks,
Say, where is Jenny?
She split.
You say?
She wanted me to go with her, but I couldn't bring myself to do it.
The general waves his arm.
Keep up, man.
Frankly, I think the general's a little nuts.
Kilmore? Spike Harris says.
Maybe the crash affected his mind?
You say?
I know one thing.
Spike says.
I'll never show him my map.
What map, you wonder? This is the first you've heard that someone has a map. The trail leads into a swamp. The general stops and holds up his arms.
This could lead us into an ambush.
He says. He kneels down and puts an ear to the ground.
No tanks coming. Ground's not shaking. Forward!
That's me when I'm about to walk into the Starbucks. Ears to the ground. No tanks coming. Forward. It's not all tanks, you know? There's other threats.
It's worth checking.
It is. Suddenly you hear a high-pitched whistle from the swamp.
That's the double mop Me Too Dipper.
Dr. Drib shouts.
Oh, I simply must find it.
Someone had better follow him and bring him back.
You argue.
He'll only get lost.
Should you go after Dr. Drib or not? Quick, think of the names of birds. Quick, name a bird. If you can think of six birds, fly over to page 70. If you don't know the difference between a crow or an ostrich, hop to page 75. Okay. Toucan. Crow, ostrich.
Sorry?
What?
I think we should go back and forth.
Okay. I cheated by saying two of the ones that they presented to us. Six birds, back and forth. I think crow ostrich is a freebie. It's a gimme. They said it for us already. So I said toucan. So now you go.
Okay. The roseate spoonbill.
That's a good one. I'm going to hit you with a... I don't want to do that one. I'll go with an emperor penguin.
I'm going to go with the pygmy nuthatch.
I'm just going to go with a good old chickadee. Are we done?
Is that not our... I think we've got seven now.
Oh. We can't name six birds.
With the crow and the ostrich.
We can't name six birds. We can only name seven.
Unfortunately, we've played too much Wingspan.
That's true. So page 70 it is. You run into the swamp and catch up with Dr. Drib.
You wanted to see the DMMD too?
He asks.
The DMMD?
The Double Mop Meatu Dipper.
He says.
Actually, I think the general's nuts. Kind of why I left him.
You admit?
Oh, a wonderful man.
Dr. Drib says.
Someday his picture will be on a postage stamp or a cereal box of some kind.
So are you coming back?
You ask.
No!
Shh!
He puts one finger to his lips.
You hear that?
All you hear is a series of long and short bird whistles. Couldn't possibly be what he's talking about, the bird watcher.
Baff! That bird is talking nonsense!
Dr. Trib says.
The bird's talking?
You repeat.
Yes, its calls are always in Morse code, but it never says anything. It makes sense.
You whistle SOS in Morse code. Three longs, three shorts, three longs. The repeat of your message comes out of the swamp. To make sure, you whistle the SOS again, and again the bird whistles back. Three longs, three shorts, three longs.
It's finally making sense.
Dr. Drib says.
If I can solve the mystery.
You say.
Will you come back with me to the others?
Go on to page 71.
Okay, it's a deal.
He agrees.
Okay, here's what I think. Somehow, the birds pick up Morse code from passing planes or ships at sea. It repeats the message it hears, the Morse code, but say it hears the word west in Morse code. It repeats the first letter, last letter first, then S, E, and W. That's why it never makes any sense.
But it did make sense repeating your SOS.
Wow. Dr. Drib says.
That's because SOS is the same backwards or forwards.
You say.
Oh, you're a genius.
Dr. Drib says.
You gave me the idea.
You admit.
Me? How?
Well, the DMMD. That's the same forward as it is backwards.
So it is! Oh, congratulations! You've solved a great puzzle in the bird world. I'm going to name a new room after you in our Museum of Odd Birds.
Thanks a lot.
You say.
But we should really get back to the others.
As you hike along, you keep thinking there's something odd about Dr. Drib's name. What is it? Then, as you leave the swamp, there comes a final burst of Morse code. Goodbye from the DMMD bird. The dots and dashes spell out two words. E-H-T space D-N-E.
Etne.
Okay. The end?
Yep.
What?
You notice there's something weird about Dr. Drib's name. It's bird backwards.
It's bird backwards. I was gonna point that one out earlier, too, but I don't know. It's bird... Bird-erd. Like, this page really gives me the energy of, like, I just found out what a palindrome is today.
Yes.
And this is my personality for the day. My personality for the day is palindrome because I just learned about race car, you know?
I can't look down upon that. That was me too.
I've been there. I remember, like, I was trying, there was, like, one week in, like, middle school or something where my goal was just to write the longest, like, sentence I could in a palindrome and, like, pass it as a note to someone and be like, they're gonna be like, this is so cool. And
were they ever like, this is so cool?
Yeah, actually.
Oh, damn.
I know, mission accomplished. Like, and then everyone clapped. No, but they did. They were like, "Wow, that's impressive." And that was it. And that's why I chase. Mm-hmm. That's why I chase. So,
do you have a favored palindrome still?
Oh, I've fallen out of the palindrome game. I got my high and I left. There's the a man a plan a Panama canal a man of
yes
one,
a man a plan a canal Panama.
Yeah, that one.
I also, like, I heard a lot of these in a Weird Al song that is just palindromes. Every line is a palindrome. Mm-hmm. And my favorite in that was it a cat I saw, or was it a car or a cat that I saw? Or a car I saw. you can change the middle words a little bit, but was it a cat I saw? I like it. It's very simple.
Yeah, I like it. All right, let's forget the names of birds for a moment.
No. We need to name 5 birds.
Okay, let's go. Ostrich.
Huh? Crow.
Toucan.
Roseate Spoonbill.
I'm out. Cock of the Rock.
That's 5, though. I'm afraid I don't know any more birds. Anything about birds at all.
I forgot.
You're gonna have to go to page 75.
Must contain a bird, woodpecker. I got to the page first. Okay.
Oh, God damn it.
Dr. Drib disappears into the swamp. Now only you, the General, and Spike Harris are left. After several hours of hiking, you suggest a rest.
Fine.
The General agrees.
But one man stays awake while the other one sleeps, just in case of hostiles.
Hostiles?
You ask?
People who might attack us.
The General explains. Sometime later, the General wakes you both. He's pointing to the line of trees in the distance.
Do you see him?
He says. And at first you don't see anything. Then you see the heads of 2 people. They seem to be gliding from the protection of one tree to the next.
They're trying to outflank us.
The General says.
Flank us?
You repeat.
Sneak around behind us.
The General explains.
I've noticed they always move from right to left. Obviously, there's a column of them somewhere, and they're sneaking around by our position, 1, 2, 3 at a time, under the cover of those trees. Old Eagle Eyes here never misses nothing.
Who are they?
You ask.
Others? Who cares?
The General says.
They're hostiles, and they need to be dealt with.
Go on to page 76.
Why don't we run away and hide?
Spike asks.
Hide? Nonsense. We'll attack.
Attack with what?
Spike asks.
We have no arms. We have courage.
The General says.
Come. I shall lead y'all into battle and make you heroes. I'm getting out of here.
Spike says. How'd it make us... The General thrusts his arm out as though he were waving a sword.
Forward! Victory is ours!
He breaks into a trot. The valley rings with the General's cries. The ground shakes under the thunder of his boots. The birds fall silent. The hostiles, quote-unquote, wait.
That idiot's gonna get us killed!
Spike says.
I'm splitting.
You realize that Spike is right. The General definitely does not have all of his marbles, and the safest thing to do is to go with Spike and leave the General behind. But you have grown to like the General? Citation needed. Somehow
because of all of his redeeming qualities.
Because of all of his Citation needed. Somehow things are always exciting when he's around. And how can you run away and hurt his feelings? I'm not sure that would be an issue.
It's not the highest of my concerns.
It's not the highest of my concerns. And also, I don't think that he would be much for being offended.
That's true. He's lost 3 people at least on this mission so far. So, yep, let's go.
I don't know if he's even noticed. He obviously thinks that you're right behind him. If you have seen a war movie in the past week, turn to page 85. If you have not seen a war movie, turn to page 82. Have you seen a war movie in the past year?
Oh boy. That's a good question.
I don't know if I'm going to be honest. I don't know if I've seen a war movie ever.
If we expand to the realm of like fantasy, does that still?
I see. I have watched Avatar.
There's some war going on before, in that, but I do believe this is definitely like literal, like
the genre,
real
the
wars.
Genre of war.
Yeah, I haven't seen Band of Brothers or any of that kind of stuff. I haven't seen Black Hawk Down.
I haven't seen Saving Private Ryan. I have not seen any of the Rambo classic movies. That's even a
didn't
war movie.
Didn't watch Dulwich? The Tenant? Nolan directed it? I don't know. It's a war movie.
I haven't seen cats versus dogs since I was a kid.
Mm-hmm.
Classic
haven't
war
seen
movie.
Baby geniuses, and there's subterfuge going on in there recently.
I have. It's been a bit since I've seen Agent Cody Banks, my favorite war flick.
Paul Giamatti's best role. Really, really locked in right there.
I think we have not seen a war movie in the past.
No, and not for lack of, you know, engaging possibly with violent media. I watched 36 episodes of a fighting tournament anime over the course of the last 4 days.
Well, there you go.
Just nothing historically war-y.
Yeah, it's just it's a blind spot for me. It's just not like I'm super excited by it. 82. You trot after the so not seeing a war movie means we follow the general.
Oh, if we'd seen one, we would know not to.
Yeah. You trot after the general, who is just entering the row of trees. The general stops. Are the hostiles attacking?
Wait, I'm coming!
You shout. As you reach the general, you see a river in front of you that was hidden by a line of trees growing on its bank. Now you realize that the so-called hostiles, who seem to be gliding from tree to tree, were actually floating down the river in canoes and rafts.
No battle?
The general says, looking disappointed.
Oh, cheer up.
Oh my god. You'll have a war one day, buddy. Don't worry. Chin up, champ. You'll do some murder soon. You tell him.
I think we're about to be rescued.
You point to a raft with two men coming down the river.
Ahoy!
You shout.
Take us on board!
The men shout back that the current is too strong for them to put into the shore.
We're gonna have to swim for it.
You tell the general. You both plunge into the river and manage to reach the raft, where the two men help you up. Their names are Huck and Jim. They share their food with you, but they are rather weird characters. They keep pretending to be pirates, and just that.
I think they're spies.
The general whispers to you.
Quick, let's unmask them.
Go on to page 83. Fortunately, just then the raft makes it to a sawmill. You thank the two men for their help.
Who are you?
You ask Huck and Jim.
Where did you come from?
We're straight out of a book.
Huck says, giving Jim a big grin. All the way back to civilization, you think of your rescuers. Who do they remind you of? Then you remember, I don't know. Then you remember a famous story in the name of the book. You'll have to read it and start on a new adventure with Huck and Jim, even though that this adventure has come to the end.
You don't get to do that. You don't get to just go, no, now read another book and that also counts. I also wrote that, basically.
I know, right? It's like at the end of like a YouTube video, like a top five favorite farts in the office, you know? And then at the end, now start watching Citizen Kane. That's part of this video. That's also
I have to admit,
video.
The Citizen Kane part was really good.
Yeah,
95.
Okay, so perhaps we have seen a war movie just for...
Yeah, it does feel strange for them to possibly lock behind whether or not you've seen a war movie, but I am now going to count 36 episodes of a fighting game anime as a war movie.
Yeah. It's also like that was technically, I guess that was a good ending, I guess.
Yeah, it didn't feel like it because I spent more time with the general, but...
Yeah, that's true. You catch up with Spike and say...
Tell me about this map of yours. Oh, you're gonna love this. It's a map of a Spanish ship that was carrying gold from Peru when it went down in a hurricane.
Spike says...
I found the ship when I was on my way back to get money for a salvage operation when the plane crashed.
Is there much treasure?
You ask.
Millions.
Of what? Of what, Spike? Spike says.
And Bitcoin! It's Bitcoin, my boy! And I'm gonna need someone strong and young like you when we get to the treasure so we can get back out of here with it.
You notice the land is changing, becoming more jungle-like, with thorny brush and thick vines everywhere around you.
Climb up into the trees and swing across from vine to vine?
You suggest, forgetting about the treasure, and also that... You both climb up. Long, hanging vines make it easy to travel through the trees, like Donkey Kong. Finally, you come to a clearing. You climb down and cautiously enter the area. Three trails laid out of the clearing to the south, the east, and the west. If you're left-handed, 89, take the West Trail on 89. Right-handed, take the East Trail on 93. If you're ambidextrous, it's equally well, take the South Trail and turn to page 90. I mean...
Well, I will volunteer first that I am right-handed.
I go between being left-handed and ambidextrous.
Perfect. So we have the opportunity to take any of these.
Yes.
Actually, let's... What was our the compass bearing in Grail Quest? It was north and then east. Right? Let's go to the right-handed. North, because north is not an option. So yeah. East on 93.
93. You and Spike follow the east trail towards evening. Toward evening, you spot a cave in a hillside. Spike wants to check it out. You both crawl into the cave and hear the sound of running water. You're thirsty, but the cave is pitch black and you have to crawl. You both keep talking so that you won't lose each other. Finally, you come into a huge cavern, the floor of which is an underground lake. You notice a dugout canoe that sits at a rocky landing.
Let's paddle around,
Spike suggests.
Maybe there's another way out.
Gotta be, or else there wouldn't be light in here,
you say. Together, you explore the underground room.
Look!
You point.
There's a tunnel leading out!
You glide into the tunnel. It gets darker and darker until finally it's pitch black. Suddenly, you break into a well-lit room. On a platform, a business executive is seated at a desk. The person takes papers from one tray and puts them into another. Then you notice a nameplate on the desk that has your name inscribed on it. What? Go to page 94.
We got tonged. We got fully tonged.
This... What? You glide out of that room and come into another room, and here the platform contains the inside of a spaceship. Two people are at the controls with their backs to you. One flight suit bears your name, and the other suit bears Spike's name. Okay? And then you glide on out of that room and enter a third room. Now the platform is an operating room in a hospital. A masked surgeon is bending over someone on the table. The surgical gown has your name on the back. You enter six more rooms. Six or eight? You lose track. You realize that all these rooms are showing you different futures. Different things that could happen to you later in your life. All with Spike?
What? Spike's gonna be very important to us.
Finally, you leave the last room and the dugout canoe tilts forward. You grab the sides. You're on a water ride. Whoosh! You fly down the wooden sides of the flume. At the bottom, a group of people are cheering and clapping. They're all the survivors of Crash Landing. You recognize Wayne, Gloria, Jeff, Pierre, Maria, Jenny, Spike, Cliff, and the General. All of the people who have shared your adventure, which has now finally...
No kidding!
...reached the end. What?
Book? What? I do not recognize Jeff, Pierre,
Jeff?
Maria?
Jeff Probst from Survivor? What are you talking about? We were in a cave! And it's a ride.
No.
It's a ride of the log flume, and this cave shows all of the future possibilities, but why?
We just forgot that we went to ride a very, very immersive log flume, which
called
simulates...
Crash Landing.
Exactly. The actors from the film that is shown to us during this log flume are just at the end applauding for us, which is weird. That's not okay.
I have never been more confused. Potentially tongs.
I understood the tongs better than this.
Yeah. Let's dissect a second. Cave is pitch black. We're in a cave canoeing with Spike.
Mm-hmm.
We glide into a tunnel that gets darker, and then we're in a well-lit room. There's a business exec at a desk. Okay. We glide out. We're in a spaceship. Mm-hmm. So, that's just been introduced as one of our possible real futures that could happen. And
with Spike.
Spike is there, too. The man that we have maybe heard two sentences from.
Mm-hmm.
We're a surgeon. Go through six or eight more futures with Spike.
Just before we stop being a surgeon for a second, a masked surgeon is bending over on someone on the table, and the surgical gown has your name on the back. like no, it doesn't! That's
shirt.
Not how surgical gowns work!
It's your name and the big number 01 on the back.
Yeah.
And your team's colors for your surgery team's colors.
Shout out to the sponsors before I remove this spleen.
Hey, what team do you surgery for? Oh, man. The New York incisions. Yeah, what about you?
The Toronto cuts.
Were the Amsterdam amputators?
Oh, dude. I used to play for the Seattle Spelunkers. Okay, so it was more about removing spleens. It was spleenunkers.
Spleenunkers. You had to be there. We had a specialty. All right. Okay. And then it was if we find out it was a really elaborate log flume ride.
Mm-hmm.
And we recognize some people that we have never met. Yep. This is wild.
We recognize these new people.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Okay, let's. I kind of want to see what some of the other paths are, but that
Here's
was so
the
wild.
Conception of it that I think makes the most sense to me.
Please hit me with it.
This is structurally a theme park ride log flume, right? So it does show you a bunch of different things as you're going through. However, it doesn't open that way. It opens as an escape room, an immersive experience escape room. And then at some point you transition into the log flume and it continues through until the very end.
Bold choice, but I gotta respect
it. But wrong. It's actually this.
A bold choice. I would do it. I would do it. But also, wow.
I kind of want to be one of the actors on the ride. If, like, you have to act in the early part of the escape room as though you're not part of the ride, and then reveal at the very end that you are. Oh. Like working in a haunted house.
Yeah, yeah.
What if we're left-handed or ambidextrous?
Yeah, let's be left-handed first.
Perfect. 89.
You and Spike take the trail to the west. In late afternoon, you come across a frightening sight. Three men are buried up to their necks in the middle of a clearing.
Oh, look!
Spike says. On the opposite side of the clearing, three horsemen are wheeling around on their mounts. The horsemen line up, and suddenly the three horses are galloping towards the three heads. Each horseman is holding a lance in charge position.
They're gonna kill those men!
You cry out.
Come on!
You both run towards the unfortunate prisoners and manage to reach the buried captives. Just before the horses get there, a curious wheeled cart comes whizzing along. On it, a man sits behind a movie camera.
Fools! You've ruined my scene!
He shouts.
Ah, you're messing up my movie!
You look over and see a makeup man carefully combing the hair of one of the buried prisoners. Finally, you and Spike are forgiven for interrupting the movie, and in fact, the boss of the company wants to make a film of Spike going after his treasure. The movie director even offers you a part. It's going to be an exciting year for you. You're going to search for lost treasure, and you're going to be a movie star. The end.
We did it. Fame, fortune, and adventure. All in one, baby.
That's a Goosebumps ending right there.
Mm-hmm.
That would be the canon ending in a Goosebumps book.
100%. Everything that was previously threatening, that's fake. And also, you're wealthy or famous.
Yep.
I have to fulfill my completionist tendency to know what would happen if we were ambidextrous.
I just got really good with my right hand, so I'd say it's about even now. So yeah, let's go to 90.
Ah, perfect.
You and Spike follow the southbound trail and come to an open field where you sit down to rest. For a moment, you close your eyes, and after a while, you notice people are working in a field. Why, it's a rubber band farm. You join them and are given food and water. Then you're asked to pick the rubber bands that grow on bushes. You have to turn over the leaves, then snatch the bands before the sun makes them too sticky to pull off. Everyone in the nearby village works on rubber bands. What's happening? The next day, you go to work in the packing sheds. Your job is to sort out the bands according to size, huge, average, or teensies. The teensies barely go around your little finger. Let me write down everything I think of. Real quick.
Oh my god.
The teensies barely go around your little finger. You visit Spike in the testing shed. He stands in a big pile of broken rubber bands, wringing his hands.
Too much, too much, too much tension!
He cries.
Let's get out of here!
You say. Suddenly, you're slammed into a huge rubber strap that goes around your waist, and And giant mechanical arms pull the strap tight. Whang! You're shot off like a paperclip. You scream and wake up. You fell asleep and had a nightmare. Get up and go back to the bottom of page 85 and choose east or west.
You're not ambidextrous. You thought you were, but you aren't.
You thought you were ambidextrous, but it's actually a nightmare. Your life is a nightmare. You can't write with both hands equally. My God.
I love it.
Wow. How did they come up?
I love how absurd it is, and I love that it still makes sense by the end.
I know. How did they come up? How did their mind go there? You get lost, and you are, there's rubber band plants, there's ginormous, normal, and teensies. Like,
if I'm entirely honest, I think this is an idea that a writer has when they're sitting at their, like, desk, and they're just like,
I don't
ideas,
know, dude.
Thoughts, and they look around, and
what
they see a rubber band,
yeah,
and they're like,
kids like? What do kids like? Rubber bands? This is the 80s. We don't have much for kids to play with rubber bands, I guess.
I mean, hey, I know so many kids who made their own rubber band balls. Kids play with rubber bands.
I play with rubber bands. If I had I could go wild on a rubber band right about now.
Oh, boy. I'm going to find a couple teensies, a couple averages to time all together. It's going to be incredible.
And how big are the teensies, might I ask again? Are they big enough to go around your pinky finger?
Barely.
Ugh, okay. I can work with it.
They're for tightening my braces, realistically.
Yeah, I know. That's what I was going to say. Oh, boy. Those are the days. Oh, boy.
This book's great.
This book's
all of it.
Great and wild.
Also, I have to say, I am over the moon glad that we managed to avoid ever meeting
the general
was referring to as the others, exactly.
Yeah, I am as well. I think we dodged a bullet, potentially from General Kilmore.
Yeah, no kidding.
It was also weird that they're like, they're setting up so much that he's just this wackadoodle man. And they're like, you know what? There's kind of a glint in his murderous little beady little eyes.
Yeah.
You know what? You're starting to kind of fall in love with this man and the way he swings his arm like a sword multiple times.
Mm-hmm. Shouts and charges forward at the same time.
You know, couldn't help but notice when he bent over to listen to the old ground for the rumblings of a tank that he's got a little bit of a caboose on him.
Ooh.
Ooh.
I have to get my hands on those medals upon him. Got a purple heart-shaped butt.
I hope he finds a tank and flattens me. Oh, man. Anyway. we found the end of the book, okay?
I believe we have.
I think we found the end of the book.
Fully exhausted that route.
Yeah, I think we fully exhausted that route, or at the very least, I am exhausted by that route. One of the two. So I'm good. I enjoyed the book for all of its unhinged glory. But yeah, any other closing thoughts on Crash Landing exclamation point? That can be put into work.
I think it was a log flume all along going to be incorporated into the tongue aesthetic of things.
That's the fact that it was... oh, God. A log flume the whole time is so good. What a twist. I agree. That's so good. Oh, man. Oh, my face hurts. Okay. It's been Crash Landing. Who is the absolutely lucky individual who gets to claim this beast as theirs?
The executive producer who claims this beast for their very own on this episode is, Sean Bean? Sean Connery. No, it's...
There's someone named Sean.
It's Sean Penn? It is someone named Sean. I know it's at least someone named Sean.
Yeah.
Could be any of them.
Well,
could be none of them.
Maybe we'll just say thank you to someone named Sean, and maybe that'll wrap it up, right? Maybe. We'll just cover all of our bases.
Sounds like a swift solution.
We'll cover all of our bases. Otherwise, we're going to be here all day. So thank you to someone named Sean.
And a special thanks to executive producer someone named Sean. Much appreciated for supporting the show over at patreon.com/turntopagecast. I constantly have to remember the four different parts of that.
Yeah.
But much appreciated to each and every person who is supporting the show over there. But a special thanks this episode to executive producer, someone named Sean.
Thank you very much. Yeah, if you want to help support the podcast in a easy breezy free way, you can either leave a like on the YouTube channel, youtube.com/@turntopagecast. On the episode, subscribing over there, all that stuff, very helpful. Or leaving a review on whatever podcast site you might use. Just another big old thank you. The Patreon supporters, it's been absolutely wonderful. Thank you so much for there.
Thanks for help keeping us afloat.
Yeah, big style. Like, it's very, 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 very helpful. Thank you very much. But hey, that's that. That's going to do it here for this week on Turn the Page. Thank you for listening. We'll see you next time. Bye-bye.
Adios.